the first time that I traveled to the Central American country of Nicaragua in 1985, 20 years ago, I was taken to see the sights, as one would take a tourist to see the sights anywhere in a new place. And I was taken to see the sights by several people, various people at different times, and invariably that trip to see the sights meant a first stop at the Cathedral Church and to the Central Plaza in the city of Managua. It's clear that the old cathedral, a majestic European edifice, designed and shipped stone by stone from Belgium to Managua, no small feat. It's clear that the cathedral was and remained the pride of the country. What remained, however, of the cathedral was its exterior shell of a crippled church with no roof at all. The inside, stone lying on stone. In fact, the entire Central Plaza, including its one, we would call mid-rise, they thought high-rise, office building, all of it a wasteland lying in ruin, decaying buildings destroyed by the great earthquake of 1972. Back then, international funds that poured into the country for repairs simply filled the ample pockets of the then puppet dictator, and the city remained and remains in ruins and its people in grinding poverty. The impetus for the uprising and revolution which followed in 1979. There's a new cathedral, yes, paid for by the owner of Domino's Pizza, with exactly the architectural taste on par with Domino's Pizza, as is the theology of its archbishop. Curiously, however, the old cathedral church, the plaza, the ruined high-rise, they stood and stand as emblems of the people's pride, and a site from which people would tell their story, an object lesson, if you will, to tell the story of their proud nation, of imperial greed inflicted upon them, revolution, and their hope for a future, their imaginations tenaciously holding on to their future as the land in which the ruins of their past would be restored. The ruins of their past would be restored. Visiting the cathedral, even in its ruined state, I could feel the energy of the place, recognize its former glory, and imagine with my hosts its rebuilding and its future glory. Well, it is something like that, that the Isaiah of our Old Testament reading, the Isaiah of Advent, it is something of this same spirit, this same bent toward the future of Jerusalem that Isaiah proclaims and preaches and hails. You see, he writes from a time in history when the Hebrew people had just returned from exile in Babylon to Jerusalem after what must have seemed like eons, eons of anticipation. And at long last, after arriving, when they returned, they found their city, their beautiful city, their hope and dream, a complete wasteland, its buildings, its people in ruin and poverty. So we can see with our mind's eyes Isaiah standing in the midst of a ruined cathedral church and proclaiming this word, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to bring good news to the oppressed, to bind up the brokenhearted, to comfort all who mourn, to give them a garland instead of ashes, oil of gladness instead of mourning, the mantle of praise instead of a faint spirit. They shall build up the ruins, the ancient ruins. They shall raise up the former devastations. They shall repair the ruined cities, the devastation of many generations." Isaiah the poet, you see, utters words of hope into the midst of absolute desperation and a downcast people, uttered words of hope that worked at people's consciousnesses, that still work at our consciousnesses. Green garlands rather than ashes, oil of gladness instead of mourning, praise rather than fainting, repair instead of so many years of ruin. Isaiah's words of hope lit a flame behind the eyes of his people whose hope had all but run out. And those words ignited possibility and possibility, passion and passion, action, all the essential ingredients of a new future. If you've been observant this morning, you saw that we lit the third candle of the Advent wreath today, and it is the lone rose-colored candle. In the Church's ancient liturgical tradition, today is called Gaudete Sunday. Gaudete in Latin means praise, praise. Today has long been marked as a particular day of rejoicing within the center of Advent, and rejoicing at the coming of the Holy One. But it's an odd and a strange kind of rejoicing. It is rejoicing built on hope. Joy built upon the imaginings of that time still to come. Joy built on hope. Hope bent on restoring ruins. Listening around the edges of conversations between words, listening to the world we're living in these weeks and months, listening to my own heart in this Advent time, I have been hearing stories, story upon story of difficult lives. Some people I've encountered have troubles way, way bigger than they are. Were they to try for just a moment to hold or to solve or even look at their lives too directly, it would be too much to bear. And by the way, that saying, God won't give you more than you can bear, that's stupid. That's bad theology, and it isn't in the Bible, as a matter of fact. But even if it were in the Bible, it would still be stupid. I meet people all the time whose grief, whose burden, whose sorrow is bigger than they are, and they certainly don't need someone with bad theology telling them that they're spiritual weaklings on top of it, do they? Well, I've heard from others, too, who it seems have swallowed their whole burden and are walking low to the ground with a kind of spiritual heartburn. Some are facing a future which right now feels like diminishment. Some are healing, but a healing that still hurts. Some are blue, finding little to hope for, little that brings them joy. I don't know if my listenings in this season are at all akin to yours, if you're hearing the same things. I don't know if you find yourself in one of the categories I've described, or if you live close to someone who does. I think it helps, however, to know that there are others. There are others. You're not alone. It may not help you right now, at this point, but there is, I think, something to learn in the darkness of the night. There's something to learn in the darkness of the night. Tom mentioned this in his sermon last week. We live in a culture, and a religious culture, that is focused on nice days, happy endings, smiley faces, and sunshine. Puppies. Well, puppies are good. Alternatively, this is a season that honors the work of the night, the hard slogging, and its underappreciated value. We are we not? We are like explorers mining treasure in darkened caves. We are like explorers mining for treasure in darkened caves. And it's easy to assume and feel that the painful and difficult work has no meaning or value. It does. It does. The good news come into the world, which has been coming into the world as long as the world has been, the good news coming into the world has always been for you and for our kind. Isaiah 'twas foretold it, the hymn says. And that good news is finding meaning and value and worth and holy presence in places where we only saw absence and loss. The good news is finding meaning and value and work and holy presence in places where we might have only seen absence and loss, ruin. Jan Richardson muses on this season and how it is possible, how it could be possible, how it happens that the light does get to us, how it could happen that the light does get to us. I cannot tell you, she says, how the light comes, but it does. But it does. And it will. That it works its way into the deepest dark that enfolds you, though it may seem long, long ages in coming, or arrive in a shape you didn't even foresee. I can't tell you how the light comes, but it does, it will. That it works its way into the deep dark that enfolds you, though it may seem long ages in coming or arrive in a shape you did not foresee. I don't know how the light comes, but it does. Those could be words straight from Isaiah's mouth. The Advent story of the Christ light coming to you, to me, to our weary world. I don't know how, but I trust that it will, that it will. One of my Christmas gifts this year will be a visit of an old friend. A high school youngster, a student in Managua, one of those who took me to that old cathedral so many years ago and told me the story of his country and proclaimed a future. Carlos, still that wide-eyed Nicaraguan youngster from the ruins who had life and passion. He now happens to have a PhD from an American university and is a high school principal in Oregon. You don't know how, but the light does come. Just like Carlos took me to his cathedral church in 1985, I want to take you to whatever ruin there is of your lives and to stand in its midst and tell you with great pride about who you have been, about the struggle you endure, and the future that is on its way to you, to you. I want to place a garland in your hands where you thought were only ashes. I want to invite you this day to a day of rejoicing. Your ancient ruins have a future, and there is a new Jerusalem awaiting you. I don't know how, but the light comes. It just does.